population. And increasingly we're seeing women who are the worried well. They're worried about their appearance. They're worried about things that look different to images they may have seen. And I think we have a lot of work to do educating our children and young women about what is normal as well as what is abnormal. So in my clinic, women present having often had multiple visits, I mean often in the hundreds, not just to GPs, but to other doctors, with many different attempts at treatment, but almost universally no diagnosis being made. If I had any shares in antifungal medication, I would not be working still, because most people seem to have had recurrent courses of antifungals. I think increasingly the internet is a very useful tool, and I absolutely value it because I don't have time to look at everything, but my patients bring me information that I would otherwise not have seen. Some of it is not helpful, but much of it points me in the direction of where people are thinking, if not new therapies. Psychosexual counselling seems to be used in some areas of Britain, but not by no means all have funding for this. But I do see women who've had years of psychosexual counselling and actually have a fairly simple skin problem that needs treating. Relators and marriage guidance, couples counselling, they do a lot of referring. Patients come from dermatology, general gynaecology, GUM, all sorts of places. So there's no normal route for a woman to present with vulval problems. The commonest complaint in my clinic, up that way, is pain at intercourse. Technically called dyspareunia. And this is more usually entrance pain, can be something that's experienced with tampons, but it has an absolute characteristic sensation of burning, rawness, or splitting. And there can be prolonged discomfort after intercourse, but there also can be patients who have constant burning, and that's a different condition. I'll talk about that later. And then increasingly, I think, in our world, we're recognizing a group of patients that have a mixture of genital pain, pain in the bladder, pain in the urethra, and pain in the vulva as well. And this is not yet characterized in any of the standard definitions. One of the problems is that the vulva is an organ. It's not just a piece of skin. And once there's pain there, it can lead to a massive effect on function. And indeed, many women that come to see me have not had intercourse for some time. I think the stress of having pain is significant. The stress of having pain in an organ that has a function related to intercourse is huge, and it damages your relationships. Women complain of a loss of a sense of being a woman. There is an association with depression, and indeed anger. And women are not unsurprisingly angry with healthcare professionals, but often with themselves for not having found the right person, not having sorted this out, having self-treated, etc., etc. And some of that anger spins over into relationships. I do think there's this amount of research and work to be done on the impact on our partners if we suffer from these sort of conditions. So just to look a bit more specifically at what I see quite a lot of fungal infections, but a fungal infection, candida, on the vulva is different to that in the vagina. And unsurprisingly, lots of GPs take swabs from the vagina and they will culture nothing. If I swab your ear, I will not necessarily culture what's growing in your throat. They're closely related, but they are not the same organ. And you can't take a swab from the vulva. You have to take a scraping, and that's not something that can be done in primary care. Bacterial vaginosis is common, and I think it does cause problems with pain, but I suspect it's one of the contributing factors rather than causing on its own. Genital herpes is not common in my practice, but it does cause pain. Children that present with vulval pain are not uncommon, and they often have worms, and the worms affect the lower part of the genital tract, and the whole family needs to be treated. And these are little girls who've often woken up screaming for weeks in a row, and there's nothing to be seen because it's very hard to catch sight of the worms. And it's always worth treating children and families if there's pain there. HIV I mentioned because it's always something that younger doctors ask me. HIV does cause significant ulceration, but it is rarely painful. And HPV, the wart virus, is not associated with pain. And that's absolutely clear from numerous studies. So this is just a lady with an HIV ulcer, and it's painless. And when her viral count went down, when she was treated for her HIV, that melted away. If we look at some of the common skin conditions that I see quite a lot of eczema and dermatitis, tend to be more itchy, but in some women, itch can be very closely related and indeed tip over into pain. Psoriasis is rare and hard to diagnose and doesn't look like psoriasis anywhere else on the body. And again, it can be painful as well as itching. And then there are a number of the lichens, and the latter two, lichen sclerosis and lichen planus, are significant problems for women. So this happens if you squirt perfume in your knickers. And this is a chronic, about 4 weeks after the acute exposure. This lady came in very swollen, very, very sore. And this is after treatment, some 4 weeks later. And you can see the skin is thickened. It looks like the bark of a tree. And she's not only itching still, but she's in a lot of discomfort. I'll just run through a case. This is an elderly lady who'd had 30 years of irritation, itching, and soreness. She was very stoical, very unwilling to give a history, because she felt that nothing could be done. She'd had depression in the past. And recently, she'd been unable to pass urine. She'd been given lots of treatments, including vaginal estrogen, but she'd been unable to insert the cream, so she'd not gone back to her GP because she was embarrassed. And that's what she looked like. She had a tiny hole right in the center of the vulva, and that's all that she was passing urine through. And that's an extreme form of lichen sclerosis. This is a more common form where there's fusion over the clitoris and at the back. And you can see how the area is narrowed and how that would cause a lot of pain on intercourse. And here's another lady who actually came in for a repair of her mild prolapse and was found to have a lot of bruising. So the clitoral hood, the labia have disappeared, and this splitting at the back where she really was uncomfortable. So you see a lot of changes with lichen sclerosis. The dominant symptom is itching, but some people simply have pain, very painful intercourse, burns when you pass urine, and it never actually affects into the vagina. That's important because I think when you're looking at yourselves, it feels as if your problems are internal, but that is simply because external skin goes in and round the corner about half a centimeter. So the language that we use to define the vagina and the vulva can be different when it's you. So it's worth having a look with a mirror and with your doctor with a mirror. The treatment of lichen sclerosis is potent topical steroids. I use them once a day. Some of the dermatologists use them twice a day. But the symptoms will go. 98% of women are going to respond to simple potent topical steroids. The skin changes will reverse, but you won't get the architecture back. So if the lips have disappeared and the clitoral hood has disappeared, it's not going to come back. We are very concerned about steroid damage in this country, and I have only one photograph of it. It's quite rare. We tend to treat very gently, and you should be seen 2 or 3 times in the first 6 months and then regularly for follow-up with lichen sclerosis. It is a lifelong condition. Many women get complete control of it, but we would want to keep an eye on your skin once a year. This is the more aggressive and much rarer lichen planus, and this does affect the vagina. It commonly affects the mouth. So when your gynecologist asks to look in your mouth, don't be surprised. It's because it's often much easier with less florid cases to see the changes in the mouth. And again, the treatment for this is a steroid cream, but often we need to use oral medication because this is so painful to put steroids on. Some of the early precancerous changes, I think it's worth looking at simply because although they rarely cause pain, they can cause irritation and they can become very sore. I'm not going to talk about cancers themselves because they're actually very rare. I'm going to talk a little bit about VIN and just show you some pictures. VIN can be very varied. It can be a single little wart-like area or an area that's quite thickened, very itchy, and beginning to split, as you can see from the bigger picture. The reason this wart is blue is that's an easy way for us to define it if we're going to remove it surgically. It's not blue naturally. The colour of the skin can be from quite dark red through to very pale. Itching is very common. Many of the younger women will have had an abnormal cervical smear in the past, maybe some irritation around the back passage, and it is absolutely vital to treat this because there is a high risk of progression to cancer with the very high grade of this. It's rare in my clinic, I don't see many cases like this, but we are very aware of this, and if you have a persistent area of itch that's isolated to one area, go and see a doctor. If you've had warts treated and they keep coming back and they're not responding to treatment, get a biopsy. Paget's disease is common in older, more common in older women. We have a national register that we run at the Royal Free. My colleague, Professor McLean, runs it. And it's a horrible disease. It's really itchy, very painful for these women, often associated with cancers of the bowel and that sort of thing. So if elderly patients, elderly relatives are complaining of being sore and itching, it is worth them seeing a doctor just to have a quick look. And that's obviously an extreme case I'm showing. Now coming on to vulval pain, I mean, I think it's clear to I'm sure many of you listening and to us as doctors that we still have limited understanding of pain syndromes. Women wait for many years before the appropriate referral. And I think many patients are seen by non-gynecologists because many of the problems are multifactorial. The International Society for the Study of Vulval Diseases has got definitions, but they are still somewhat inconsistent, and we're at the moment using ones that are now a decade old. The definition of any chronic pain syndrome is pain of more than 3 months in duration. This is the classification, and on the right of the screen is the more modern classification, which I think is really helpful for patients and for doctors, because it talks about primary, have you always had this? Has it been triggered by something? Is it secondary? Is it provoked by something? Or is it there as a background pain all the time? And then it tries to limit to the anatomical site where the pain is. And this can be very helpful when we're thinking about treatment. So this is just some data from a while ago at the Royal Free, just to show you that I see a spread of patients. And these are all patients, nearly 130 of them, who had vulval pain as their referring diagnosis in the letter. And in fact, there was a number of other conditions within that pain profile. So if you go to a vulval clinic, they should be able to manage all vulval disease, not just pain or VIN. Vulval doctors are trained across the spectrum. So the characteristics of pain in the entrance, vestibulodynia, again, burning rawness, splitting. These are usually younger women, usually premenopausal, but I do have some patients who presented well after the menopause, so there's no hard and fast rule. Entry dyspareunia is the commonest complaint, and a burning sensation that can last after intercourse and can last for some days or even a week or so after intercourse. There's a classical appearance of redness, tenderness with a cotton bud, and it is more common that this occur rather than from the very beginning, but the primary, when it's occurred from the moment of first intercourse, is more difficult to treat. So the etiology, and this is from a colleague of mine in the Karolinska in Sweden, Nina Bohm-Stark, and we know that if you look on the right of the screen, there are triggers for this, and if you take the example of a 16-year-old having her first intercourse, she gets cystitis, she's treated with antibiotics, she gets thrush, she's treated with antibiotics, pill, which thins the mucosa, which means she's more likely to get thrush or likely to get an infection. This goes round and round and round. She then gets pain. She's obviously impaired sexually. She's anxious about intercourse. And all of these things can put you into a pain amplification model. And I think it's worth thinking through these things when you see doctors, because often some of these triggers are things that we can do something about. So this is a picture of a patient, and you can see there's quite a lot of redness, but I'm just pressing gently on the glands that go round the area of the hymen. But most importantly, even just being examined, you can see a split happening right at the back of the vulva. And there's a larger picture just to show you the split. So I think when we're trying to treat this, we need to try and define the triggers. If there's infection present, we must treat it, particularly if it's cyclical. Steroids can be used. Trimovate's a combination of a moderate steroid, commonly used in things like eczema and dermatitis. And a number of women do have an underlying skin condition that's presented like this. Local anesthetic gel can help in terms of function, but it also can help in a desensitizing regime, using it differently. I think most importantly at the moment are the biofeedback techniques, pelvic floor physiotherapy, realigning pelvic musculature to put different pressures, if you like, on the nerves, and then surgery, and I'll come on to that. It's rare that the oral medications are of any help in this group. Surgery is controversial, and I don't want anyone to go away from this session thinking that surgery is the answer to everything. There are lots of other things going on. I picked out Botox because I'm constantly being asked about the role of Botox by women. There has been a study done in Norway. There is no evidence that Botox anywhere in the genital tract has any positive effect on pain, but I've no doubt there will be more interest in this as the years go by. If you look at surgery from the science perspective, there's very little good science out there. There are 8 retrospective studies, only 6 prospective ones, and only 2 in the category of really good scientific research where women are randomized to different treatment modalities. And that's because it's actually very difficult to randomize a surgical patient. So if I show you just this one figure, this is Christine Bergeron's great piece of work way back in 2001. And she compared surgery with various different techniques. And again, biofeedback and CBT were in their infancy a decade ago. But if you look, surgery showed around a 70% complete relief. Pretty low for the EMG and the CBT. And these patients were followed up for 2.5 years, and the results were consistent. So that led to a great interest in surgery. If you combine the surgical studies and the graph, and you look at the blocks from right to left, you see a decrease in a visual analog score, so patient-reported score, with surgery. So surgery does seem to be effective. There are negative predictors. Women have always had pain, and pain that is unprovoked. Positive predictors are if you are successful early on in the treatment course. So if it's worked early on, it will work long term. Very few serious side effects, but I've seen one, for example, one Barthelm's duct occlusion, but we always warn patients about them. However, we are anxious about this. Although it's safe and there is evidence it's successful, generally we agree that surgery should not be the first line of treatment. And that, I think, is because our patient selection is difficult. Understanding the underlying skin problems, the diagnosis itself, is still quite crude. So we are less likely to leap straight into surgery. I think it's absolutely imperative that we treat the pelvic floor problems, the tight muscles, the angulation floor, before we do any surgery. And I do think that everybody undergoing surgery needs formal psychological support, both pre- and postoperatively. If we look at the unprovoked pain, this is more common in older patients. I do see younger patients with this, but it tends to be a spillover from very severe provoked pain. And these are women who suffer from burning and tingling sensations the whole time. It's not usually exacerbated by intercourse, except in the younger group. And it's similar to the other pain syndromes of facial pain and trigeminal neuralgia. And it does respond well to either drugs singly or in combination. The other approaches are less successful, although there are some studies that support CBT. And again, I think psychological support for women with chronic pain anywhere is vital. Some of the physical therapies are widely dealt with. HAD lasers work's been around for a very long while. But biofeedback can be difficult for some women and can increase pain. And again, I think it's asking a lot of women to buy something, go away and use it, and then if you fail, it's your problem. I do think we need to take some responsibility as the medical profession for how we use these things. I'm increasingly interested in the use of skilled professional physiotherapists who actually understand the pelvic floor, will understand triggers, will help with all of the areas of dysfunction that occur because of chronic pain. And we've got some interesting data coming out about the role of physiotherapy as primary treatment, suggesting that perhaps it's more successful than anything else long term, including surgery. But we do need to do more work on this academically. So I think all vulval pain can be treated, but it does require combination, it requires careful thinking. And I think it isn't the one visit. It's a process that I go through is often trying to understand the pain. It takes more than one visit. And although the Royal Free is very supportive of my work, I still do have to see enough patients to make the clinic viable. So I often find that I'm learning about the pain with patients, including their response to various treatment modalities over several visits. I think physical therapies are increasingly important. I do still operate on patients with vestibular dyspnea, but very carefully selected cases. And I think a holistic approach is absolutely vital. The minimum success rate is 65%. In my clinic, we discharge between 85 and 88% of patients within 14 months of diagnosis. So we do have successes in this group. So what can women do? Well, I think it's try and reduce any irritation. Soap, salt, and perfumes I don't like. I showed you the photograph of the lady and her exposure to perfume. I'm very interested in the use of emollients. I've learnt most about this from patients, actually. I think emollients are increasingly important in terms of the quality of skin, and I think we need to do more work about that. I think women need to look at themselves. Changing appearances are really important. Get advice, use the internet, use support groups, and nag your doctors. Keep complaining until you get the diagnosis. We do train doctors. GPs do, in the UK, nearly all of them do some women's health, but there's very limited learning about sexual function and vulval disease. Dermatologists have a huge amount of knowledge, and I work very closely with dermatologists at the Free, but many of them may not have specific knowledge of vulval skin disease and certainly no knowledge of sexual function. In gynecology, all of our young doctors have basic knowledge, and I'm very grateful to colleagues such as David Nunns who are rewriting parts of our curriculum. We do have advanced training which enables some of them to get to the level where they could run a vulval clinic, and that's been popular and they've really performed very well. And I think women need to have a voice with those who actually buy our services, and certainly as the English NHS changes, I'd ask all of you to lobby so that we can get more vulval clinics out there. So I think all vulval disease is manageable. I think making a diagnosis is absolutely vital, and that needs to be done within specialist clinics, I think. We need a multidisciplinary approach. Women need to know their bodies, and they need to know when they need to ask for help. Help is available, and I think we all need to learn to look more closely at this interesting area. Thank you very much.